Well, welcome back, everybody, for a very somber and serious special edition of Health Talks with Dr. Trinh. As we talk about the health of a whole country, it's going through hell right now. As we talk with the people who are really there and really living through this living nightmare, as we continue to explore, as we did before, what the hell is happening in Ukraine?
But Ukrainians shoot it and it fall down on a house. So I heard it. And it's like very scary sound. It's sound that should that you should hear it hell. It's like, and you try to understand how far was that. And are you the next one who gonna be this sound? So every time we go down, and after I found the account of one man who been to Syria, who've been to Donbass in 2014, and he said that it's not a good idea to hide underground if it's not a special place for hiding. And we start to live in our bathroom, like a lot of people did. We put their, I don't know what, like everything to make beds in a bathroom.
In a bathtub?
Yeah. And after we realized that it's a bad idea to live in a bathroom, and we go into Nika, could you help me, corridor?
It's in the hallway.
Oh, yeah. So we live there because there is a rule of two walls. You need to hide yourself after two walls. So first wall will be destroyed if rocket came, and the second will save your life. So the only one possibility to be in a safe place, it was this hole. And in 5 days, we decide to get out of the city. And we did not want to do it with a car because our city was surrounded by Russian. Not surrounded totally, but like somewhere, there were somewhere. And actually it was scary to stay because, for example, one day before we decide to move, it was the Komendantsky Chas.
Let me see. So it's when the army people say you shouldn't go out because the some shooting will happen or something. So
like
they just
everybody
have to,
should like, stay at house. Everyone who will be outside are in danger. So sit home. So we sit home for like 2 days, and after it was possible, we left. And it was pretty scary and horrible. It was just a train where you can go without tickets. So me, my husband, Data, who was 20, I don't know, 28 days old, we went to a railway station. It was a really long way because we need to cross the bridge. And the bridge is a very important place. So there is a lot of stuff where everybody checks your documents. And are you a terrorist? Are you Russians?
Yeah.
And you should stop everywhere. And finally, we went to the railway station. And at the war time, nobody pay for tickets. So you have no opportunity to sit in a comfortable place, like to buy a comfortable ticket in a comfortable, I don't know, place in a train. So everybody.
Yeah, so, no one has a guarantee that they will get on the train, first of all. And there were a huge crowd on the railway station every day, the whole day until the curfew started. Like the whole time outside of curfew, people were trying to enter any train they could. And as Valerie mentioned, our city is divided into two parts, and there is a huge river Dnieper in between. And there are a couple bridges, several bridges, like seven bridges to cross the river. But there are like lots of checkpoints and lots of cars crossing the river back and forth. Someone had to pick up relatives. Someone need to buy something. So it's overwhelmed. And to get to railway station itself, especially from the residential area where most people live on the left bank, it was a real hustle. So it would take people several hours just to get to station and then several hours to, you know, get through the crowd to have the opportunity to get to the train. So people could come, you know, several days in a row, even walk to the railway station to get the opportunity to get into the train.
Yeah, I've seen people who were walking to the railway station through the bridge, and because, for example, you can use the subway, but subway do not cross the river. So subway go till last station on one side of the city and starts from the next one, and you can do nothing. Like there was no way to cross the bridge on the car or by foot. So yeah.
So let me interrupt for 1 second here, because unfortunately we did lose some on Facebook. Other mediums, they could hear you, but for Facebook, there was a problem and we've resolved it. Everybody can hear you now. So I just want to give a quick overview of who you two are for those that might have missed the first 5-10 minutes of the show. I think we just lost Valerie again.
It is difficult getting internet signal out of there. I apologize to everybody. I appreciate everybody hanging in there with us. We've brought on today, I'll let you introduce yourself one more time here, Nika. You are here in Los Angeles, but you're Ukrainian. You usually lecture on health issues, and you were all set to go back home until this crisis happened. Did I get that right?
Yeah. I had a flight home on the exact day where the war started, and all my family, my business, my team, and all my friends are in Ukraine.
And then you brought on somebody that you knew who was Valerie, who hopefully will join us again here if she can get back on the internet.
Yeah, well, Valerie is a host on national radio called NB, and she has a 8-week-old baby, and she had to flee her home 5 days after the war started to go to Western Ukraine from the capital.
And that's what you
guys are. I can hear everyone. Is it a problem with my connection?
No. We lost you there for a minute. You disappeared. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so anyway, and then Valerie obviously fled Kiev, and that's what you guys were talking about, this major city. If I understand it correctly, I've never been to Kiev, but it looks like any modern European city. I mean, this doesn't...
Yeah, exactly. Our tourism was growing up, and because of people not really being afraid of COVID, somehow ignoring it, we had a lot of tourists from Europe who wanted to, spend some time in the clubs, hang out, a lot of, young people saying Kiev is the new Berlin and stuff. And I had an Airbnb in Ukraine, and it was so popular during COVID. I couldn't, explain it, because so many people were coming. They said, oh, why didn't we come before? Because it's such a beautiful city, and it's completely, modern. It's, 1,000 years old, but at the same time, all the restaurants, all the infrastructure, it's great. I mean, it's Europe.
So I wouldn't feel any different if I was probably in Prague or Berlin or any other.
No, you will definitely feel the difference, because our restaurants are the best in Europe, I guess.
Well, other than it being better than those places.
Well, definitely. Yeah, a lot of cities were destroyed during World War II, but Kyiv was sort of intact. So we have lots of old buildings, like the huge city center, all historic, and it's very nice. And at the same time, a lot of new development. So it's really up and coming city. It used to be, but then one day someone decided to take everything away from us.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe it, and it's hard to imagine happening something like this in Paris.
I guess that's what I'm getting at. And maybe you can comment on this. So we sit back here just trying to wrap our heads around this. Why and what and what happens next? And it's hard for us to imagine in the modern era. This isn't the 1920s. This isn't the 1820s, where armies rolled in and devastated cities and stuff. We thought that was gone. We didn't think we're an interconnected world. We have interconnected economies and interconnected flights. And we didn't think this could happen. Did the Ukrainians really think that the Russians were going to go this far, that they would roll in like Czechoslovakia in 68
Well, as you hear from us, we were completely relaxed, and Valerie was at her home. I was going to fly to Ukraine the day before, so everyone were completely, okay. Nobody expected them to go all the way, to do the whole country intervention, because they used to have fights in the eastern part, and everyone expected to have, that continue, and our army was fighting back. So there was something going on for 8 years already, but no one ever expected something like this. So U.S. Government required their embassy employees to come back to U.S. In the beginning of February. But
because they kept saying, this is really going to happen. Everybody's, oh, come on, you're just overblowing the crisis. They'll find a resolution. The Russians already support some separatists in the east and prop them up and been fighting. So they'll probably move in and take over that. And they took over Crimea, which nobody was happy about. But, they'll take some little piece and they'll call it a day. They didn't think they'd take over the whole country.
Well, I hope they will never take over the whole country, because, that's the worst nightmare for Ukrainians, to be under Russian, because, Russians never heard of democracy, never heard of freedom, never developed anything. I think the people in Russia didn't ever expect that we're such a flourishing country there. Oh. So they come, soldiers come to Ukraine, they, fight there, they see the villages, and then they say, oh my God, they have pavement in the villages, they have lights on the streets, it's, like a normal country.
They have toilets inside the house.
Yes. Wow.
Are you serious? That's not, wow.
Yeah, I think their perception was that, and I won't speak for you, so I'll let you, one of the common things we hear, Putin has said this repeatedly, and I think it was his surprise that many Russians, because you come from a common ancestor, Ukrainians and Russians were 1,000 years ago, all kind of sprang from this common group of people.
So let me stop you right there, because we don't have common ancestors, but we were united by Soviet Union, and Soviet Union was suppressing Ukrainian culture, Ukrainian language, religion. So that's the artificial impression that we have something in common, because we don't. Unfortunately, that's the common misunderstanding. We have more in common, like Ukrainian language has more in common with Polish language, like 60%, and like 40% with Russian. And Russians do not understand Ukrainian language, like if we speak.
And they do not understand Polish and Slovakian and Czech language. Yeah. They do not understand European languages, but we do. And all that we've got in history common, that's Russian or something that have been in Russian part, always try to destroy everything Ukrainian. So for 300 years before this moment. So it's nothing new. It's just the continue of something that happened in 300 years.
So
what is the daily situation like now for the average Ukrainian? I know it's different between cities,
right?
But you're
in the western part. So the assumption was that that's still safe, and yet they've been bombing that now recently.
I'm not sure that it's still safe, because the first stop city was Lviv. It's like a good, perfect city in the western part of Ukraine, but we slept with an air raid, the sirens, they are screaming like, careful, rockets are coming. So it doesn't mean that they are coming to your house. It's mean that they're coming in this direction where you live.
Yeah.
And we live there for 2 weeks because the random woman said, I had a problem with my breast. I'm doing the breastfeeding to my child. And because I didn't have an opportunity to visit doctor during the war, it started a big problem for me. So when I came to Lviv, I try to communicate with someone who can help me with a problem. And the woman who started to help me, she said, you can live in my apartment. So it was a random woman that I never seen before. And we were living in her house for 2 weeks. And we decided to move because it was too big explosion in Yavoriv place. It's like a place with the soldiers. And this is completely scary. When you hear the sirens, it means that you need to go underground. Mm-hmm. But the last night, the sirens were for 5 hours. For example,
for 5 hours, the sirens are going on.
Sirens. Yeah. And I was in a bath. I was washing my hair. Data were sleeping and it starts the sirens. So I get out from the bath with everything wet. Like I put my jacket and stuff. I took my sleeping baby who started to scream because sirens, they are really scary. It's sound that you can hear even if your windows are closed. Like, be careful, the rockets, you need to hear it. And you go to the place where it's cold and because it's underground and it's not okay to live in this condition. If you have this experience every night and they're shooting with the rockets at night because they want to make, a psychological attack as well,
right.
Like all country
to break the spirit of the country for the people to give up. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you're for 5 hours sitting in a cold place.
Bomb shelter.
Yeah. So it's not okay. And we moved to another city. At least the city is far from some soldiers.
Army bases.
Yeah. Yeah. And there is a sirens here, but what I'm doing, it's like, I'm closing my windows and I'm not reacting anymore. And it's stupid because it's dangerous, but I'm just thinking, I hope it's not here. It's not going here because it's you should be the idiot if you want to shoot with a $1 million rocket to a private house in a village, right?
Yeah. Really? Really? Why do you want to spend $1 million to blow up somebody's private house here and kill them and their baby?
When you say it's safe in the western part, it's not. We've got explosion here, but it's not the same like in Kharkiv, like in Kyiv. It's different.
What about the reports that we're hearing now? I mean, we're all trying to make sense of this. And the first thing that disappears in time of war is truth. Rumors start spreading about everything. The latest rumor, the latest theory is that your neighbors to the north, the Belarusians, are going to, under pressure from their, the dictator that runs that, the puppet that runs that one, if that's a fair way to describe him, that he's going to, because the Russians are out of men, and the Russians don't want to lose any more men, so he's going to force them into invading your country as well. And that now you have two nations. Is that?
Well, we have somebody else in the waiting room.
Okay.
Ready to come in from
I'll get them. Talk about that. Is any fear that any truth to that? Do you think the Belarusians are going to send troops across the border? Your neighbors?
I'm pretty sure it's already happened because they are dictators, and Lukashenko received money from the Putin. It's not official, maybe, but like, have you seen the revolution and how the dictator killed people during the revolution? Like, they do not care about feelings of people. They just like
power. Right.
Yeah.
But how would the Belarusian people feel about that? I don't know anything about Belarus, or I know it's a similar language. I know it's another similar culture, but...
Haven't you followed the revolution that have been like 2 years ago there?
You know what? Most Americans couldn't find Belarus on a map.
They tried to said that it's not okay to make elections false again, right? And they were killed on the streets. Everybody who were on a protest, they've been arrested. Some of them been, they had very bad situation with,
a lot of people were tortured by police. They were arrested. They were kept in prison with no reason except of going on the streets and asking for, you know, real elections, because they were trying to re-elect the person that they really want to rule the country, something new, but not to have the same. So I wanted to also introduce one more person here, Valentina. She lives in LA with her family, but now she felt the need to fly to Poland and then go to Ukraine to help there.
So are you in Ukraine right now or in Poland?
Yeah, I'm in Lviv, where my family is. So I'm trying to convince them to leave. And I think it worked otherwise.
I think it worked otherwise. So forgive me if I offend anybody here, but we're all trying to make sense of this. And one of the shocks that so many of us feel when we read the reports is not just the 3 million people. 3 million people, they're estimating now, have fled the country. That's almost like 10% of the country has left. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Where do they go and how do they live and how long are they going to be there? Forever? For a day? For a week? But how many of them took their families across the border and then immediately went back and said, I'm going to fight.
Men cannot leave the country because they're like, it's a worse situation. Right, yeah. Right. And
reason why I'm still here. I do not want to leave the country with a newborn baby without my husband. Yeah. Like, where I should go as a refugee with a newborn baby with nobody care about me, like where I would take money, where I'm gonna live, who gonna protect me, because I can do nothing. All I can do is like care about the baby. He can't anything without me. So we are staying in a not pretty safe part just because, sorry, it's a child.
Yeah.
Just because
I think the child summarizes how we all feel right now, just screaming. Yeah, right.
For sure. Yeah. So I can't go because like my husband should stay here because it's war and he can receive this document that means that he should go and fight with the Russian animals.
Yeah, let's not confuse refugees with socio-economical opportunists.
Explain that. I don't understand what you mean by that.
People don't go abroad because they see it as an opportunity to live in the European Union, you know, or
make more money or get a better job or something.
Look for a better life, right?
Yeah, right.
People go there because either something, you know, their apartment is being bombed, or actually it's easier to protect something when you have less people. So our army is asking us, if you can you please get the hell out of, because it's easier for us to defend.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When there's less of you, where you can be used
as hostages, as whatever. And
so many ways to, you know, even things like putting guys with the stingers on top of the buildings so they can intercept the missiles and rockets, right? If you have less people in the building that's being used to shoot something from, who turn on the lights and make people up there visible, you know, so there's so many reasons why it's better for people to leave. But again, they're not going there to look for jobs. So there's a lot of connections.
So you've gone halfway around the world to go back to your family to make the case in person, leave. get the heck out of here. Let the troops fight this out. And your family is saying what? We're never leaving. We're not leaving.
It looks like this, just like my family example. My dad, right? My dad is eligible to leave. He's like, I cannot go. I'm staying with my wife. It's not my mom, but my stepmom. My stepmom says, I cannot leave. I have a child, my stepbrother, who's 35. He can't leave. That's it. I'm not going to make mom say, you know, goodbye to her grown-up kid. Just forget it. I have a 15-year-old. I would never leave him. So this argument just doesn't work. So moms stay because of their older kids. And that's it. And it's like a chain. And I think it's in every second family.
So people are staying and fighting. And even those fleeing, I hear reports of women dropping their kids off, literally dropping their kids off, and then going back and saying, please take care of my children. I'm going back to the fight. Women, men.
A lot of women picked up the arms. Yeah, I would be useless with arms. So
yeah,
me too. I'm better in supply chain. I'm better in buying and moving things. So that's where I'm, and I'm still working full time. So I bring some money into the country and stuff. But a lot of my friends, my girlfriends picked up arms.
And that's my question to all three of you. I can't wrap my head around being in a war zone and wondering if my child is going to be killed by a missile. I can't to do that day after day. What does that do psychologically to you? How does that wear? Does that show about health after all? What is the health of the Ukrainian people, right? I know they're resistant. I know they're mad. I know they're not quitting. But talk about their health and how long can they handle this?
Well, first of all, the supply chain is broken in most part of the country. So people don't get, you know, the basics. Like they don't get, you know, balanced meals like 2-3 times of the day as we expect, right? Some cities are completely disconnected. They don't have electricity. They don't have heating. And they're staying in bomb shelters where it's really cold still, without hot meals, without any normal sleep, because it's always interrupted by the sirens. So there is nothing left from the healthy lifestyle they used to have, even remotely. They don't move enough because, you know, they stay in the bomb shelters again one more time. They cannot even, you know, take a walk, like walk their dogs because sirens, because bombing. So it's basically people imprisoned in bomb shelters, and a lot of volunteers, some like governmental organizations, some, you know, foundations are trying to deliver at least some basics to the bomb shelters. Well, you can even imagine if you move the whole hospital to an underground floor, they don't have real bomb shelters like in the most part of the country. So let's face it, it's underground floor. If you move the whole hospital in the underground floor, they don't even have the restroom there. So if it's an injured person or a sick person, he is not very mobile. So it's even impossible to go one level up to, you know, use the restroom.
So beyond physical health, talk about mental health. How do you live in fear day after day without sleep?
I can answer you. First 5 days, it was the most scary days of my life, because when you holding your 20 days old child and you can't leave the city and you hear the explosions, it's like, you feel like you can't do anything. And this is what I felt first time in my life. I can't do anything. There is a bombing somewhere. I can't leave the city because too many people try to leave. And they're just like, you know, cars are not moving. They're standing and very slow moving, like 5 kilometers hour. And we were sitting and we were scary. And I was crying all the time. Like, you never been so useless. You can't do anything. You're totally controlled by fear and by Putin's animals, you know? So now when we moved, I feel less fear because I don't hear explosions. I hear just the sirens, and they're not so regular here as in Kyiv. Because in Kyiv, they're like 5 times an hour can be sometimes. And here, there was no sirens today still. And
so one day, one day without sirens. Yep. So Valentina, what is your family feel? I know they're angry. I know they're upset. I know they're ready to fight, but they've got to also be frightened and tired and worried. And
yeah, you know, it's like a fight, flight, or freeze, right? The normal three, well, the typical three reactions. And if I would guess,
denial, anger.
If I were to guess, what's the most prevalent response? I'm just looking around. People around me, most of the people are in a fight mode. There are some freezes, like, and especially the folks, you know, like our friend here who were in the middle of, you know, bombs falling on your head. This is where you know, you feel useless and whatnot. But majority are fighting, and you fight in many different ways.
Yes, right. Every I mean, whether
I'm
it's
trying to do something, because that gives me comfort for myself. So my boyfriend, who's in Los Angeles, he keeps calling me and saying, like, I don't know how you're handling this. I'm like, right. How am I handling this? I'm moving power banks. I'm moving equipment. That's my fight mode, and I need it for me to stay sane. And my entire family is like this. So they're just, we got the license, we are moving things, so we go to Poland, pick up things, send them to the east. So like everybody's working.
So let
that's
me
the way we deal with this.
Let me ask Valerie a question again.
Are you speaking to family and friends that are kind of stuck in the city?
Yeah. We all do.
How are they, you know, how are they dealing with like no power, no water, no electricity and all that right now?
How are those first words?
There are a lot of people like posting about it. Like some of them still have internet connection from time to time, and most of them are just accepted that they can die one day, like today or tomorrow or at some point, and they're living with that. Just accepted it like that. Like they were completely happy in their new homes, and then one
so you
day,
say that so casually. I can't imagine most people in Orange County just accepting
this as well. I do not have anyone who live without electricity like right now in Ukraine. I know it's happening in Mariupol probably, but actually I was talking to psychologist from Kharkiv because she was in a like building that was okay. Like a lot of buildings were destroyed, but this building was okay. And my friend, she've got a son like 1 year old, and they live in a very small village, and they can hear the explosions. So that's why they do not move, because they see that there are street fights. So they do not want to move with a car. And they said that for them, problem is that they've got a very big problem with the pumpers and a special food for babies. But actually, everything else is okay. Mostly cities live normal, like with electricity. Like Kyiv is with electricity, with the water, with everything else. And like my dad stayed in a city that is occupied right now, and he can't leave the city because they controlled everything. And there are a lot of stories like somebody tried to give like $500 to leave the city, you know, like...
anything, bribe your way out, right?
Corruption.
To these animals. And they've been killed. So they took money and killed people who tried to leave the city. So he sits in the occupied city,
so
like a lot of people do.
Two more questions. I'm only trying to cut you off a little bit because we're trying to get as much in as we can. We got about 10 minutes to go here on the show, 10 or 15 minutes. Two more questions that come to my mind, and then we'll open it up to questions from the audience here. First question is, how? I'm an American. So immediately, my first thought is money. What do you do for money? How do you buy food? How do you pay rent? You have no job.
Money is not a problem. Money is not a problem because, for example, my dad right now has got money on a credit card, but city is occupied. So nobody can put the money, like money, you know, like right. How to money that is a paper money, not
cash.
Like
cash.
So you've got a problem with this. And for
how
example,
do you pay for everything, though? I mean, you still got to live. You still got to buy food. You still got to buy shelter. So, you got to buy baby food and everything. How do you have no job, I'm assuming, right now. And you're living.
My husband has got the job, so he continued to work. Mm-hmm. And and my mom received the salary, but she's not working, but somehow she received a salary. So she worked in from the budget. She received salary from the budget. Right. So somehow it works. I do not have salary, but I receive money for a child. Mm-hmm. It's not a big money, but
it's a maternity leave support.
Yeah. So
but,
for my family,
but at some point companies break down and they can't pay people and people have no money and their savings run out.
I
want to
tell you a story how we live here. A couple of days ago, our new neighbor in this new house bring us potato. Another woman help us to buy shoes because we left apartment in a winter shoes and right now is like spring. So we were trying to buy shoes and she's just like, oh, you are refugees, let me help you. So, and even in the case that I've got some money right now, I receive too many help from everyone from this part of Ukraine. They see that I'm like a refugee with a baby and yeah. Everybody helps. It's like crazy. Someone bring us a soup yesterday. Like, hello, we are neighbors, you don't know us, but here is the soup.
Wow. And it's really weird. Everybody try to help you. I lived in an apartment of woman for 2 weeks. A woman I've seen the first time in my life, because everybody tried to be the best one at this moment. Everybody right. tried to make anything for make Ukraine win. Like, if I can help to this woman, I'll do this. That's what I feel here.
That says it all. Everybody trying to do their best to win.
Ukraine is very communal. Like, we, in general, we are very, our nation, we are very communal. So what's going on is very natural to us. You know, you, somebody gets hit and there will be 10 people who's going to run in and try to help. Zelensky is already doing certain things where some of the taxes got prepaid and lowered. He started to send help for people who moved. It's like the government helps businesses work. I work in engineering and I have huge teams here of guys who can't leave. Yeah. Because of the martial law, all of them work. They write a software code in a bomb shelter. They go upstairs, committed. They go back. And I tell them, you can take some time off. You know, dude, you're being bombed. And he's like, I need to work because I get the money. If I get the money, I send it to the army. That's in the head of people. Wow. So businesses are actually, of course, in a, like Mariupol, Kherson, that's understood. But in the rest of the country, we are all working. We have to. There's no other choice.
So two more questions. And any questions from the audience, we'll interject those as well here. I just got to think two thoughts. One, what happens to the 3 million people who have fled the country? Do they hope they're going to come back in a week, a month, or will they never come back just because they can't? Or it goes on to, are they permanent refugees somewhere else or for a long time refugees somewhere else?
So
what
we'll
do we
think
have anyone here again?
We'll all think that you, like all of you, like foreigners, will be very surprised how many Ukrainians will come back home.
Yeah.
Because they just announced they're going to take 100,000 into the U.S. and we're taking, Europe's opening its arms. People, Poland has taken a massive number of people. And the question we all have is this forever or is this just for, we hope it's for a while, but.
As well, of course, some people will stay forever if they like, if they get, you know, used to, if they like it. Maybe at some point their partners will join them, even if they were drafted to army or something. But I think also a lot of people love their home and they want to come back.
I guess the question is not correct. Like, how many people will come back? I guess a lot of people will come back if it will be safe.
Right.
When I will go back home, when I will go back to Kyiv, I will go back to Kyiv when Russian animals will get out of there and it will be safe. Like, if they will stay in Kharkiv, if they will stay in Mariupol, if they will stay in a lot of different cities, it means the next time they start the war from there, and
right.
it's still going to be dangerous. So I'll go to Kyiv. When we, Ukrainian army, any army of any world, help
right.
us to make this bullshit go home. And that means that it's going to be safe enough for me.
So that's my last question, and then I'll shut up here.
What is the hope that this will end soon versus this is going to be something that drags out for months and months? Do you get a sense from just the people you talk to and the folks that are around you of what it looks like?
The Russian army is pretty big, just, you know, people-wise, and they can draft more and more and more if they just want to send them at us. So we have no illusions that it can end in one day if Russians want to keep it, you know, going. So Ukrainians are just fighting back as long as they can and, you know, hope for better and hope for help from the neighbors, help from the world, because, you know, we got rid of our nukes in, like, getting promises that we will be, you know, helped. But at this point, we're on our own.
Yeah,
that's really one of the forgotten stories in this, is that when the Soviet Union split up, a lot of nuclear weapons were left behind in Ukraine, which fell under their control. And the world, the U.S. and the Europeans said, please give up those nuclear weapons. And the Ukrainians said, sure, we don't really need them. But why should we give? They protect us. And the world said, just give them up. We'll stand by you. You don't need these nuclear weapons. If they had those nuclear weapons, would Putin have invaded? Probably not.
Probably not. We gave them to Russia. Under the terms that they will protect us.
Wow. Are you, what is your sense as far as you know, quote unquote, making a deal, giving up something of value, land, or, you know, things of that sort, just to...
Is there a compromise to be had at this point, or are the Ukrainians saying all or nothing?
It's, I mean, we have this war since 2014.
Yeah.
Really, guys. So if there could have been compromise, that would have been done
back then.
Sorry,
what is the compromise? Of they want to kill Ukrainians because they are Ukrainians and then they do not want to kill. Like, there is our country, and we said, we are Ukrainians, and we are not Russians. Ukraine is a different country. And they come here and said, no, you are Russia, and we want a compromise. You should say that part of us are Russians. Right. Let's do a compromise. Fuck off, maybe?
Yeah. I appreciate your bluntness, and I'm not advocating anything one way or another, but I think we all sit on the side and we say, how does this end? Because it seems to have gotten into somewhat of a stalemate. The Russians seem to be gearing up for another offensive. They're going to maybe bring in troops from Belarus and other things. They certainly have a large, overwhelming force that they can bring to bear against a smaller country. And we all wonder, can the Ukrainians survive? Or is this just going to turn into Afghanistan and endless guerrilla war?
Actually, it can't. And I'm not a military expert, so please don't take my advice. But Chechen war, there are two Chechen wars, yes, right? And Russia is known for doing this kind of stuff. But that scenario where something can drag for 7 years is not going to work for Ukraine. Why? Because we are actually big. It will take a lot of resource to occupy the country of that size.
40 million people in Ukraine. Now, this isn't a small Chechnya.
No, we're not talking this. We're talking, and you also, it's the country that hates you. And we are known for really powerful guerrilla movement. It would be the worst idea on the planet to try to occupy it. Even if, allegedly, let's say they take part of the south. Good luck.
So holding that. And because the theory is, well, okay, two sides have kind of reached a stalemate and the Russians are being pummeled with sanctions and the Russian army looks disorganized and has been shown not to be as powerful as we all assumed it was and well-run and well-organized. And so it's an embarrassment. It's not working. It's costing them a lot. At some point, they'll try and cut a deal and cut their losses. And many people are saying, I don't think the Ukrainians will take a deal at this point in time.
No, they killed our kids.
They killed kids. They killed lots of kids. All right. Welcome, Tatiana, to our show here. Tatiana, where are you at?
Hi, everyone. Sorry, because I really have messed with the time. I'm in Amsterdam with my son also. So hi to everyone in the last 5 minutes, I guess.
And did you leave? Were you in Ukraine and fled to Amsterdam, or have you been there for a while?
I've been.
Yes, Tatiana fled from Kyiv, from the capital.
Yeah, I'm from Kyiv. Yeah, for sure. And at the morning of 24th of February, we were with my son and with my colleague in Lviv. So it's much closer to the border. So I guess now everyone knows there is Lviv. And we decided to go to the border and to go to Europe. So 2 weeks we were in Berlin after like 3 days on the border by car. And 2 weeks on the road plus.
And what's it like to flee? Just two questions. You know, the physical journey of getting across the border. We hear reports, the cars are so backed up, people are just leaving the car on the road and walking across the border, anything they can do to get across the border, which means you've left everything behind, not just your house and your home and your family and your friends, but now your car and everything you had in the car. Yeah. You literally just walk across with the clothes on your back.
Tatiana spent 3 days on the border to drive, you know, because the car line was so much bigger.
Yeah, I decided not to leave the car because it was like, actually, I don't know. I can't figure out what should I decide then in like a couple of days, but it was the first day. Then it was the first day of the war. Then I decide cross the border, so I can't pretend. So how much do it last? So we like stand with our car in the line. So it was like 9 kilometers and 3 days, you know.
And so how do you survive? You drove to go to Amsterdam. Did you have friends or family there, or did you just keep driving till you couldn't drive anymore?
No. So lucky me, I have friends in Berlin. So we drove from the border to Berlin and lived there for 2 weeks. And after that, we decided to move to Amsterdam because of like private reasons, like with friends and so on. Now we are here, so it's for us, it's comfortable now. Short story, I work for non-profit and I have my own charity platform, so I can work from everywhere. But for sure, we want to go home as it can be happen, yeah.
So when do you think, any hopes, any what are you hearing on the ground? Are Ukrainians beginning to believe this is going to go on for months, maybe years? This is going to turn into a guerrilla war. This is not just going to go away. Or is there some hope that they're going to come to their senses, the Russians, and get the heck out?
Well, none of us is a war expert, but at the same time, everyone is a human. So we all hope it ends today, so people stop dying, because that's all that matters, right? Like people being safe again in their homes.
But we've got the deadline, actually. On our media and social media, there is our Arestovich. It's a person that everybody listen to every day. It's a person connected to government. And he said that, give us a month and we will kick them. I strongly believe that in a month something can happen.
Okay.
But like we've got 3 plans for our life. We're sitting here and waiting. We're coming back to Kiev to rebuild our country. This is the best plan for us. And if things getting worse, we are going to Poland and next to Switzerland or somewhere in Canada. Because if everything going to be worse here, it's going to be Poland going to be next, Germany going to be next. It's not going to stop here. Like Putin is the Hitler and everybody should realize it. If it's not clear still, you will understand it a bit later with the blood like we do.
Is there a feeling in, I don't know, none of you are Poles or Latvians, Lithuanians, Estonians, all these other groups, but there's got to be fear in all these former Soviet republics that they're next, that Putin wants it all back.
I can take this because I lived in Poland for 8 years and I have a lot of friends there. Poland has been hurt by war probably more than anybody, and I'm talking World War II, to the point that their memories are so fresh, even like 80 years ago later. So they understood what's going on before anybody else. That's why they just opened their arms and said, like, we know, we get it, it's a problem. So, and they are already working on, they put more budget into their army. So Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, all the Baltic countries, they're all in the union because they see Hitler 2.0, they get it, and this Hitler has the nukes. They understand.
Right.
They have no illusions, and I wish Western Europe would listen more to the Central Europe, you know, who's got the memo.
So do you feel you're getting, I know there's a lot of support, but is there sufficient support, or do you feel somewhat upset because, like here are the arms, you know, here are some weapons, but we don't want to do anything else? How do you feel about that? As far as there's emotional conflict, right? Because nobody actually wants to send you in, but they'll send you some, you know, supplies and weapons and things of that sort.
Can I start to answer this question?
Yes.
The biggest problem for Ukraine for a long time and right now is the rockets. This is the psychological pressure as well to all country. Like I'm saying, I can hear the sirens. Maybe you can hear it if it's going to happen during the broadcast. But we were asking like everywhere, like our politics, people in Instagram, not to close the sky. Like, help us to fight the rockets, and we can do everything else here on the land. But rockets,
there are anti-missile things like our Patriot missiles that we supply to Israel and other places. There are missile defense systems that we've chosen not to go there because we think it's too provocative, but we may get to
anyway,
that point.
Like, you are asking, what is not happening? A lot of people died because the sky is not closed, so... Yes. This is one of the biggest problem as I see. It's just my opinion because I'm hiding. Every time I hear the siren, I'm hiding.
And let's talk about this just for 1 second. And again, I don't want to offend anybody. We're trying to honestly understand and do this. And I think Americans are very torn on this idea, as are Europeans. Should we try and send our jets and our missiles and try and shut down the sky? The fear is that to do that, we'll have to shoot down Russian jets. And the minute we start shooting down Russian jets, it's World War III and the nukes start flying.
Such an interesting question, because what do you classify as a world war?
Right.
2+ countries, 3+ countries? Right. Because if it's 2+, Belarus is already providing, so by the, you know, Geneva Convention and whatnot, there are already 3 countries involved in that. And, you know, I have my own shit list. And actually, for me, China and India are in the top.
Yeah, they're not doing much to support. They're being very quiet on this and trying to be neutral or support Russians even. Yeah.
Well, it's a great moment of power play, and China can get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
They can use it. I'm pissed off as a Biden when he went to China to talk about China instead of saying, "Hey, we have the situation here." Yeah, we have not been friends for a long time, but let's figure out something that will benefit us both and help Ukraine. Instead, what he did, he threatened them with sanctions. I get it, but fucking not the right time, man.
Well, and
you need him on your side for once.
Although the Chinese, we're trying to figure out where they're going to come down on this. Clearly, they are supporting the Russians. Anything that embarrasses the U.S. is good for them. And they're trying to get Ukrainian wheat and oil to come their way rather than go to Europe. So to a certain degree, they're supporting Putin and hopes he wins and takes it all over and then ships everything from Ukraine, not to Europe anymore, but to them because they need it.
They're communists, right? They have a lot of connection. They like when people listen to one guy. I get that. And also Russia has a backup plan. That's why the economic sanctions kind of work halfway, because plan B is China. You close SWIFT, they send money through China. That's the only really country that we need to come on our side, and then Russia is screwed.
Yeah, if we could get the Chinese to flip, then the Russians would have to fold. But clearly the Chinese also are viewing this as a test to see if the Russians can take back Ukraine into the Soviet Empire, then maybe they can take back Taiwan, which they've wanted for 50 years as well here. I mean, there's layer after layer of this, and it doesn't seem that we're not sure which way the Chinese are going to go on this. And should we pressure them or should we try and befriend them? I don't know. We're not very friendly with them these days.
Offer something that's better than Taiwan. You know?
All right, so Tatiana raised her hand. She wanted to chime in on this here. Yeah.
Just one notice about like close the sky and European people. Because I've been for 2 weeks in Berlin with German people, they are really afraid of closing the sky.
Very much.
At the moment, they are like helping me and my kid, and they are like welcome me at their home and help Ukrainians and volunteer and like donate to Ukraine and so on. Then we spoke about closing the sky, and like the first hour like ask of Ukraine. So they are like become like silent. They discuss. So we don't want to do that because their World War III will be gone.
Yes, we're afraid. We're all afraid that the minute any European NATO country or the U.S. kills a Russian to try and stop them from flying or doing something, the minute that happens, they're afraid that the escalation is unstoppable. And we've got World
War III. Do you remember the history of Second World War?
Okay.
Yep. Or maybe Russians should call it this Second World Special Operation, probably how they call Ukrainian war, right?
Special ops.
Everybody were waiting. Maybe Hitler will stop.
Yes.
Maybe he is normal. Like, I'm not sure, but it looks like if everybody will waiting, you will see the new Hitler. Like, it looks like maybe we are too angry, but it's what we can see here. They just coming to kill. You know what they say in the national news in Russia? They said that here is a lot of Nazis in Ukraine.
Yeah, I know,
that
Nazis.
We are making a biological weapon that we hide in the birds.
Right.
And you're just like, what? Coronavirus were invented in Ukraine.
Yeah.
Guys.
It wasn't that long ago that there were many in this country who were saying, well, Ukraine, maybe they were really the ones that hacked the election and just tried to make the Russians blame for it. The Russians are blameless. They're good. But it was the Ukrainians that did all this, and they've been corrupt and they've been evil. You know, suddenly we're all embracing Ukraine, but 3-4 years ago, there were many in this country who were trying to portray Ukraine as a corrupt place that
the bigger
we
the lie, the better the conspiracy.
So we had some questions here. I just want to give a shout out to some people here. Thank you for listening. I'm open to going a few more minutes if you are, Dr. Trin.
I'm good.
I don't have another show doing this, so this is a rare opportunity to talk to four brave young women who are willing to come on and share with us what they really see, not what I'm reading and trying to figure out in the news from all the chaos and confusion. Everybody's got a point of view. All right. Somebody said earlier a question about, and I'm sort of summarizing here. You guys understand these dictators more than I do. You had a Russian, maybe it's too harsh to call him a puppet, but this guy that you kicked out in 2014 who fled to Russia and started the whole democratic revolution that really infuriated the Russians and they feared would spread throughout the area, maybe to their own country. The Belarusians squashed it. The Kazakhs recently had some revolts and the Russians sent troops there quietly, which nobody paid any attention to support the dictator there, just like they propped up their dictator in Belarus to the north. And some think that this Putin won't stop until this whole democracy is squashed, because to let it live on would be a threat to his whole control over Russia. Can he ever quit? I mean, is he's just in this to the end? Yeah. Either he's going to get overthrown or he's going to crush the country.
You know what is the Tsar?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's the king. He will never quit.
So how then does this end if he has endless power, not endless, but
he should eat something in a bunker and die. That's how it should
end. He looks like, since we're on a health talk show, first of all, Putin looks pretty sick. Like if you watch any video with him, he looks pretty sick now, but it may take months and years until he actually die, and we don't have that time.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, so if you've got Hitler, if people assume, well, we could have stopped Hitler in Czechoslovakia, we could have stopped him in Austria, we could have stopped him here until we finally said enough, and we started World War II when he invaded Poland after giving him a couple of countries and hoping that was enough. I think many Americans hope, I hate to say this, they would sacrifice Ukraine and they would say, okay, I feel really bad about it, but gee, if it stops here, let's just cut a deal and give him half the country and call it a day and hope that it goes back to normal. Maybe some Ukraine. I don't think many Ukrainians feel that way anymore.
Except it's not for U.S. to decide.
Oh, I know. But at some point, does the U.S. and the Europeans, I don't want to say decide, but at some point we've got to decide how far do we go? How long will we support this? Or at some point do we start pressuring everybody to just cut a deal and to make it go away? That's a horrible thing to say, but I think that's...
No, I get it. We have this joke. So there's North Korea and there's North to Korea. This is what Russia is turning into at the moment. You know, are we okay as a UN to have another outcast? And it's a pretty big one, 140 million people, right?
Yeah, right.
It's difficult. And that's my personal opinion. I don't think Putin dying helps. First of all, because he has... doppelgangers, there's like he has at least 4 clones, because in the news for the past time you see him handling events in 4 different cities at the same time.
Yeah, right? I think that's been the assumption that this isn't just as powerful as Putin is, as much of a dictator is. Yeah. There's 4 other mafia bosses that would gladly take over and do that if he died.
There's more, and I do have friends in Russia who are now fleeing right now. And what they told me when the war just started terrified me, because they called me and say, "You don't understand. He believes in this. He's been lying so much, him and his community, that at this point they actually believe that there are some Nazis that they're saving from." And it's like a collective psychosis. You don't fix collective psychosis.
No, you start to believe your own BS here, and they believe the Ukrainians are really just Russians, and why they'll eventually come. There's just some people that are, I don't understand why they're fighting this. We're helping them. We're taking them over. We're going to bring them back home here. So the question that somebody had on the internet was a good one. I'm just asking your impressions and your family's impressions. It's just what's your own experience. Is the average Russian behind this? Is the average Russian soldier as gung-ho, believing like Putin that this is a just cause and a just war and it's time to take them back and bring them back? Are they supporting this? Or because we hear stories of Russians walking away from their tanks, bewildered why they're even there, protests popping up here and there, and others say, oh, no, that's just Western news trying to build up story. Is there a story there? Are the Russian people behind this? What do you think? Any of you?
20 years of propaganda.
Yeah.
20 years, you're being told that black is white.
Right.
Yep.
I even have those people in my own family and one aunt that she, like, it's unbelievable. That thing is powerful. So if you do it for 20 years, there's a huge support for Putin.
Okay. That's and, not good news for all of us, but yes.
Yeah, they
keep posting. Valentina is not alone. A lot of families can't communicate, like my family as well. I can't communicate with my relatives in Russia because they said, no, it's your army killing your people.
Yeah.
Open your eyes. Don't watch the media you watched. And the media I watch is a window, you know?
Okay. And, so also Russians say, okay, sit tight, friend, or, you know, sister, sit tight. We're going to free you soon.
We're going to free you. We're here there to free you, not to conquer you or crush you or kill you. We are there to free you.
And we were free before they came, right?
Can free the free people.
Tatiana?
The main idea, this the difference between Ukrainians and Russia, that Russia is always, like, for hundreds of years. So, like, always, because Russia is, like, hundreds of years, not thousands.
Dominating power in the area.
It's forced, like, all the people are forced by fear. And people in Ukraine are forced by freedom. And this is the main difference. Mm-hmm. And that's why these people from Russia, even like they are our relatives or like parents and someone else, living in Russia, became like people who watching this propaganda, and they are like...
they're only acting from the point of fear. So they don't get it. They don't forget it.
Because we read over and over again that one of the subtle tactics, the Ukrainians have risen up in a way that surprised the world. Let's be honest. Everybody assumed that the Russian might would roll in, and as much as Ukrainians fought, they would lose within the first week or two of the war. They would just be overwhelmed, overrun, bombed, defeated by this massive force, and it hasn't happened. So that's been a shock to the world, that the Ukrainians have stopped this Russian juggernaut. And the Russian juggernaut has been seen to be not as powerful as we all assumed it was. Very confused, very chaotic.
They're so corrupt.
Corrupt,
oh my
yes,
gosh, right. These morons.
You know how it works? There is a lot of homeless people in Kyiv, and homeless people came to guys who protect our city. It's not an army. It's just the active people. Who
militias
like
and
weapons.
Whatnot. Yeah.
And the homeless people said, we are trying to find the bottles. Would you like to, we can give you the bottles that we are find so you can make a cocktail of Molotov. If you need it, we can help you.
The homeless people will collect bottles so you can fill them with fuel and burn a tank. Yeah.
And everyone doing this, you know, it's like you can't free us because even people who do not have nothing to lose don't want to be Russians.
Even people who have nothing to lose don't want to be Russians. So I wonder when Russians, your friends, your family, the people you've talked to in Russia, will wake up and realize that this is not going to go well. This is Afghanistan. This is Iraq. This is the Vietnam War. This is an endless fight.
Those folks who see through the propaganda all this time, there's a percent of them. I don't think it's a big one, but it exists. They're actively moving the hell out because they understand this. The Iron Curtain's gonna fall. They will be again north to Korea. That's it. So people on the run, but majority, you know, it's and there's nothing you can do. Like if you've been working on 20 years and making somebody a zombie,
right?
How much time it will take to undo it? It doesn't work with one, you know, news podcast, with one picture. It doesn't. Okay, world proclaimed Putin to be a war criminal. Russia's like, no, this gotta be, nah. You know, so those
fake
who
news.
Get it.
Well, we live in that world now where nobody believes anything. You hear even in our country, you hear it and you just dismiss it. That's just fake news. I don't want to believe that, so I won't believe it. So I got to believe then that if they, what you're saying is true, the will to fight is there, where homeless people are willing, who have nothing to gain either way, are willing to enlist and join the fight. If it's that much determination, if the Russians have completely misread the Ukrainian people and their will to fight, then this will not end quickly or quietly. This will go on for some time, and the Ukrainians will keep fighting, and the Russians will keep flattening their cities, and the world will keep sitting back in horror, hoping that it ends, and fearing that it'll spread.
It's your opinion. My opinion is different.
No, I'm trying to give me your opinion, please. Yeah.
I want to believe that economic of Russia collapsed soon, that they would have the iron, how it's called, border, you know, like right. It wasn't Soviet Union. They Burton. Can't move anywhere. They will keep themselves inside. They will live in this bullshit, but only they wouldn't have money, and they somehow we gonna win. We will receive enough support from the world, and we gonna win. Putin should die, and we should win, because this is unfair. Everything that happened is unfair. My child shouldn't live in an apartment of people that I never seen. My child should sleep in his own bed. He shouldn't sleep in the bed of people that I never seen. This is unfair. It can't happen. That shouldn't be like that.
I'm going to support you, because my wife and I were talking about this, and she said something I thought was very powerful. She said, okay, so everybody's pushing, hoping this will come to a compromise, and maybe the Russians get part of the country, and maybe they pull out. But in the meantime, how do you explain to all the mothers out there why your children died?
You just don't.
You can't leave the half of country to the Russia, because the next time they will start the war from this part of Russia, right. And they will go to Poland. Like, okay, world do not want to see that, but world do not see what the Russia is. They are sick animals.
So I think we've all seen enough of history to know that even if the Russians seem to overrun the country in the short run, they will never conquer the country, and the country will keep fighting back, and you'll have this like what they went through in Afghanistan and what we went through in Afghanistan, this notion that we could somehow come and just take over a country and turn it into something if the people don't want it, or Vietnam or other places that we think of here in the U.S., these endless wars that we eventually realized were foolish and we gave up after a long time, though. So I think there's no question that the Ukrainians have shown they're not going to just go away. They're not just going to surrender. They're not just going to give up. Having said that, how long will it take for Russia to collapse, for Russians to wake up, for somebody to overthrow Putin, for all these things we keep hoping to happen? It can't be quick. It's got to be a while, because Putin's all in. Right?
There's an awesome saying. There's another saying. So this is a war between fridge and the TV.
Say that again. I'm sorry. It's a war between.
It's a war between fridge and the TV.
Refrigerator versus TV.
Yeah, because the TV is putting some thoughts in your head, right? But fridge basically controls your basic, you know,
your food.
Hygiene factors. So when there's nothing to eat, eventually you do stop listening to a TV.
Absolutely.
That's why it will end when China, again, on my shit list, number one, will figure out how to use it to their advantage and support us, because that's when fridge will start winning.
And that's the question, and nobody knows.
Hungry people will, you know.
There are many people that say, I just did a post on this a while ago. This is maybe a little too complicated, but the Chinese very quietly been trying to push this $1 trillion initiative called Belt and Road, where they're going to build a giant, what basically rebuild sort of the old Silk Road trade route from China all the way to Europe. And it runs through Iran and Turkey and Kazakhstan and Ukraine, because the one thing the Chinese don't have enough of is oil and wheat and basic commodities. And so their hope is when they finally finish this road and highway and train and transportation corridor, that they will compete for all the oil and resources in Eastern Europe. And rather than going to Germany and Poland, it will come to China. So some people say they're all for the Russians taking this over, because the Russians will then turn much of that over to the Chinese. I don't know if that's true or not, but I don't know that the Chinese see an advantage to helping the Ukrainians. I think they'd like to conquer the Ukrainians as much as the Russians would and take everything they've got.
That's why I think somebody needs to show a class in diplomacy from US and for once figure the hell out how do you stop this, you know, diplomacy war, foreign policy issues, and figure something that benefits both. You gotta find a win-win.
Yeah.
That's why I was pissed at Biden, but he's like, he came in and sanctioned them, threatened them. Awesome. Because that's helping me. No, it doesn't.
Well, because that's the assumption is they're dictators too, and that's the only thing they understand is a threat.
I get it. So maybe you're somebody else, you know, like Zelensky. Who knew that he would be a great president?
This guy was a comedian. We thought it was a joke when you elected
Absolutely.
A comedian.
So he does things differently, and it worked. So maybe you guys, and by the way, I'm an Ukrainian-American, so I'm talking to myself right now.
Yeah.
Maybe our government can figure out, be creative for once.
I hope they will be. I don't know how they can. I think that... we can't understand the Chinese motivation any more than we understand Putin's motivation. It's hard for us to understand why. I wonder, you know, he wanted to squash the Ukrainian democracy because he was afraid it would. He has this old fashioned notion that Russians, we're all just brothers and they'll welcome us with open arms. He has this megalomania of recreating the Soviet Empire again and making Russia great again. Where have we heard this before? Make our country great again. Take over other parts of the world. All this stuff that goes from, and many of us here go, I don't understand that. I don't even understand why anybody would do this in today's world. The Ukrainians are not going to, even if you win, you lose. Even if you take over this country, you're not, it's the price you're going to pay is enormous and they're never going to give up. So don't you get that?
And also we've been under Russia, technically in Soviet Union, and they were trying to suppress us, but they didn't succeed, right? Like we woke up like years and years, decades later, and we still have our culture. We still have our books, our
separate
music,
language,
everything.
Separate culture, separate everything there. Yeah.
So
I there's no question that the history says over and over again, these dictators, these conquerors, these long-term invasions never work. Whether when we did it as the U.S. or when other countries have done it, when we've tried to take over countries and force them to become something they don't want to be, it never works. Having said that, it doesn't happen quickly. So that's the fear. Oh, my God. And it could easily spin out of control and turn into something bigger where they go after Poland and the Baltics. And now suddenly we're committed to war. And I don't know. Can we contain this? Can we control this? What more can we do as Americans? Let me ask you that. Other than sending in jets to shoot down Russian missiles and creating a no-fly zone, which we're afraid of, other than that, what can we do? We've sanctioned the hell out of them in a way that I never thought we could do that much sanctioning. And we've gotten the world, other than China and maybe India and a couple other places, to really go along with this. We've put a big hurt on the Russian economy, I think. Or is it just...
And thank you. Yeah, I'm so grateful for that. Because if they can sell gold, which is their reserve, you know, ruble is... It's
dropped 80%. It's worthless on the world currency.
Yes.
But they thought they were going to miss their sovereign debt payments, all this money they borrowed from the world. They didn't think they were going to default, which would totally devastate their economy here. Then they get no credit. No, their banks can't exchange money. They're becoming an isolated entity here. And I don't know. We're playing a game of chicken, as they say here in the United States. Who's going to blink first? And the Russians have said, we're not blinking. We're going to go all in. We're going to flatten Ukraine if we have to. We're going to kill everybody just to win. And the Americans are saying, if you do, you're going to pay a heavy, heavy, heavy price that will eventually bring you to your knees.
Yeah, there is a very bloody and very quick solution, but nobody will go for that.
What is the quick solution? Just a no-fly zone?
Nagasaki was a solution, but that's like, you know, yeah, we're not doing that. We're civilized. It's 2022, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Right? And then, I don't know. I'm going to, you know, give my opinion, then I'll shut up because I keep talking a lot.
No. We called to hear your opinions and to share a little bit of our frustration and fear as well. We don't know what to do.
Yeah. So what I hope for, figure out this China situation, because again, China is a plan B for Russia. If they have no plan B, and these guys don't have plan C, just believe me.
Yeah, right.
Because they think of them too much.
Too many times. I heard some politicians say, so what's your plan B? He said, go back to plan A. The only backup is to go back to the first plan. Yeah.
They're in love with themselves, imperialists. So yeah, which actually plays into all of this to our favor. So this China situation, and another thing that I had on my mind is like what I personally fear the most, that it will become a long time war.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to jinx it, but I think it's this. I fear the same thing.
Right. It's like when people will, you know, if you see something, if you see a picture of that kid 10 times,
right?
As humans, we stop reacting to it the way we did the first time.
We shut it off. It becomes just. It's starving babies in Africa. I've seen them so many times that it has very little effect on
the same thing. So I'm terrified of us turning into Syria, Iraq, you know, whatever would help stopping this to become a long-term thing. And again, I'm not an expert, so I don't know what it is, but that would help.
Yes.
Tatiana,
you want to, we're not experts. Yeah, go ahead.
We need to listen to our president and give everything he asks. So here is the answer.
And I think other than a no-fly zone, we've done everything. You tell us if we haven't. It seems like we have tried to do everything except that final step. Tatiana? Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, I'm agreed. So nobody from this like room is not a military expert for sure. So we couldn't pretend the start of such war,
right.
And we cannot pretend the end of it. But we understand the meaning of values, like human values,
right,
for now. And the human values is like the most important thing in all of our lives, and we understand it. So no money, no like, and gold, yes, no gold, no gas are like something like important, but like values, like human
values,
and
right.
It's the same in Ukraine and in Europe and US and so on. So it means that there's never be the same with Russia anymore. So their time of USSR was like their the best time for Russia, I guess, and will never be the same, because everyone understands that it was like fake and with Iran like something. But nobody can like in our generation and the generation of our kids, no one will respect Russia at all.
No, I think so, if they ever hope that the Ukrainians would embrace and come back to Russia, that hope is gone. You've created a hatred that will last for generations now. Somebody, I just want to make one quick point, and then I'll turn it over to Nika to end this. One of our guests, who I'm assuming might be Chinese, said, please make clear that when we talk about the Chinese, we're not talking about the people of China. We're talking about the Chinese government, the communist government, the dictatorship that exists in China, that like other dictators, only thinks about their own self-interest and what's good for them, and not the human values of the world. Yeah,
yeah, we hear you. We know. We're good.
And it's the same thing with the Russians. That's what I was trying to get at. I get that the ordinary people have been filled with propaganda and have limited and have been fed this lie and narrative for so long that many of them believe it. Just like in this country, there are people, I'd argue the same thing, get fed lies and believe them. That this is really, as they keep saying it, Putin's war. This is a dictator trying to impose his will on another country for his own ambition, his own madness, his own ideas, and all
well,
of
Ukrainian,
that.
Ukrainians don't agree with that, because we showed Russians how to do the revolution like only 8 years ago. Yeah. They know the scenario. They know what to do. There are 140 million people. If they don't agree, they go out and do the revolution. They already did it in 1991.
Navalny. Yeah. Do you remember Navalny come back to Russia to show that I'm ready to die for you guys?
That's Let's hard for me to wrap my head around. The guy is safe and he comes back and puts himself in prison.
Yeah, he went to prison and he expected that Russia will stand up and will start the revolution. But what they did?
Nothing.
That's all that they can do. They can do nothing. They are ready only to kiss Putin's ass. That's all that I'm ready for.
So this hope that the few revolts and are not revolts, protests that we've seen will spread is probably false. For until the Russian refrigerator is empty, as Valentina said, they will keep supporting or believing, or at least out of fear, staying indoors, whether it's fear or belief, they will not rise up and demand an end to this war, which would end it. If the Russian people turned out en masse in the streets, that would end it too. It ended our...
You can't put everybody in jail. Jail's limited. So
yeah, exactly. But, you can't put everybody in jail. You can't shoot everybody. Eventually, as you guys showed in your own...
talking about Russia. Yeah. Please. They have unlimited jails. This is Russia.
So they got a lot more room than you think.
Yeah. We can remember Archipelag Gulag, Solzhenitsyn.
Yeah.
So I started to read it like 1 week before the war. And I was so afraid, to read that, so I like finished, and now we like see the same.
Isn't there fear too that, and I'm sorry to keep going on, but that if the Russians succeed, if they bomb the country and literally level the cities and drive everybody out, but if they did, I hope you're right, that they will start, even in parts that they control, won't they start rounding up people and deporting them and putting them in camps? Won't they?
They're already doing it. They're already kidnapping people from Kherson. They kidnapping people from Kherson and driving them to Russia. We don't know their, you know, future.
Overall, in 2014, there is a concentration camp in Donetsk region.
Really?
Okay. It calls, you can read about this in a book that called, can you help me with the translation? Stanislav Asiev wrote a book. He was the prisoner of this concentration camp. He is the Ukrainian. You can check the information. His the book name is The Light... Way, so
the light way, the light way,
the way of light,
the way of light.
Svetlyy shlyah.
Oh yeah, it's light way, but it's in Ukrainian. It's in Ukrainian, so I'm not sure if you can find the book.
But you can find the author in Facebook, Stanislav Asiev.
Well, so I don't know how this is, where it ends. I don't know how long the world will stand by and support you, or at what point I fear that we'll give up and say, all right, it's Syria. I can't do anything anymore. I don't know. For now, it's an amazing story that has shocked everybody, why the Russians invaded, how the Ukrainians stood up, how the rest of Europe and the United States came together after being so divided and did all this. Every aspect of this shocks me. And I think the next, there's still more probably coming. What will the Chinese do? What will the Belarusians do? Will they cross into Poland? Will the Russians rise up or just go along? All these are unanswered questions that we're going to find an answer to in the coming weeks and months, and hopefully not years, but time that lies ahead. This has opened an unbelievable scenario that because it's so unimaginable, we can't even imagine how it ends. Maybe I'll say that. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yep.
All right. Thank you for taking the time to share your stories, to tell us what's really happening. Because understand, we're sitting here in safe Orange County. All we're doing is trying to figure out, what? Did you hear this? Is it really that? It can't be. Why? What? When? How long?
We're doing the same, but under the sirens.
Under the sirens. Yeah, I gather that, because I can't imagine how we would react in similar situations if suddenly foreign power rolled into Orange County and started bombing us and killing our babies.
9/11, Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, and look how the country reacted at 9/11. I've never seen such shock across the country. You know,
now imagine 9/11 every day in every city.
Yes,
that's what's happening.
That's
imagine 9/11 every day in every city.
That's how you.
So already more than 20,000 victims. So
I think that says it all, because Americans can relate to that. I remember when 9/11 hit and I was other side of the country and I felt frightened. Where was it going to happen next? What building was going to blow up next? For a while, we thought this was going to happen all over the country. And that fear paralyzed us. And the markets crashed and everybody ran home and everything shut down. And just we had one unbelievable attack. And we suddenly thought, oh, my goodness, this is going to happen anywhere and everywhere. And thank goodness.
Yeah, just from one hit, the whole country felt unsafe. And we got hit like in every city.
Yes. So I think that makes it relatable to us in a way I've been struggling to find here. Thank you for sharing that. I hope you will come back and continue to share the story, because my fear is, like everybody, we move on. Oh, that's horrible, but I can't face it anymore. I don't know what else to do. So at some point we just accept it. And the minute we accept it, if we ever do, then they've won and the fight goes on. And we can't ever accept this. So, as Elaine said, one of our guests, extraordinary testimonies. Thank you. God help you. Good luck, and keep coming back and keep the courageous fight up. You inspire all of us, and more we're beginning to realize your fight is our fight. This is not just one fight. This is maybe the fight. So thank you for sharing that.
Boss level.
Stay safe and take care of that baby. Oh my God. I can't imagine my grandson in a war zone. I can't even let myself go there and think about that. I'll start crying if I even think of that. So
I'm not crying only for 4 days since 24th of February, just 4 days.
Yeah.
So that's my small winning. Because after the pregnancy and the giving a birth, I've got a lot of tears, and they're connected not only to my body, and it's connected to what's happening in my country. Okay. Thank you for the broadcast.
Thanks for having us, Paul.
Thank you. Stay safe. And keep coming back and telling the story so we can keep this front and foremost in our mind here. Thank you. All right, that's going to wrap it up. I know Dr. Trent had to drop out. I'm going to end this right here. I'm going to leave Nika one last chance. You organized this, brought all these people together. What would you like us to take away? What would you like us to remember? Is it that image of imagine 9/11 every day in every city in America here?
Yeah, if you want to relate, that's the best image. And that's why you cannot, you know, stay aside and watch it, because, ignorance kills the most.
Yes.
If everyone is ignoring what's happening, we're dying, like Ukrainians are dying every day. They're innocent. They didn't bring that on themselves, and they need your help.
All right. Well, thank you. Your conversation helped me. I hope it helped others, and I hope others will share this conversation with others. If you really want to know what's really going on, here's four brave women telling their story of what they're really seeing and experiencing. Some who've left, some who've stayed, some who've fighting, some who are ready to fight. It's an amazing group of people, and thank you for sharing. I really do. It's a rare opportunity to hear from people.
Thank you, Paul. Until next time.
Until next time. Yes, there is a next time. Thank you very much.